We are speaking this morning with actress, playwright, and author Liana Renee Heber. She is award-winning best-selling author of Gothic, Victorian, fantasy novels for adults and teens. Also a four-time Prism Award winner for excellence in the genre of fantasy romance. What's it mean when you get awards like that, Liana?
It means to me that I have done my work as a very cross-genre writer. I have elements in my work that appeal to folks who like historical fiction, who like mystery, suspense, thrillers, a dash of romance, a dash of spooky bits, for those who like young adult fiction, too. So there's really something for everyone, because I have a wide range of ages of my characters, and I really like all kinds of genre fiction, so it's really exciting that I can weave them all together. And I know it sounds like it might be disjointed, but in a historical context, the 19th century was full of people who were fascinated by ghosts and other paranormal goings-on, where science stopped and magic began was kind of a blurry line, and I really love exploring that.
Now, what is the term gas lamp fantasy? This is something you've come up with, or you kind of, it sort of capsulizes what you do?
It is, and it's actually one of my publishers, Tor, was kind enough to sort of suggest that my first series called the Strangely Beautiful series, they call it a foundation work of gaslamp fantasy. It's a newer term that's come up within the past, you know, decade. It's been coming into more prominent usage in terms of the setting, the time period being that gaslit era. So it really helps to encapsulate the two sides of what it is that I'm doing, that gaslit era, so very atmospheric. You know, when you think about a gaslit street, you have a feeling of that atmosphere of what that feels like. And then you throw in, for me, ghosts and occult, paranormal, supernatural goings on, and there's the fantasy angle. So it's blurring these two things of a historic time period, but also introducing this kind of magical element to it. So the gaslamp fantasy is a really helpful term, and I'm really glad to have been part of getting that into more common usage.
Well, let's talk about this new book you have called The Spectral City. Describe it to us.
So it is set in 1899, New York City. I am a New York City tour guide. I live in the city. I'm Ohio-born and raised. However, I've been in New York now for almost 13 years, and I've been a tour guide most of those years. And this city is full of incredible things, and the history of this city is so rich and exciting. So in that turn of the 20th century, I have placed at the center of my story a young medium. She's a psychic. She can see, speak with, interpret ghosts and what it is that they might want. She can listen to them and process what they're here for still on this mortal plane. So it's 1899, and she's been beset by ghosts ever since she was a child. She's 19 now, and so she needs to do something with her life. And for a lot of women of that age, especially if you were in kind of a middle-class family as she is, most women were sort of forced into various marriages that would help the family, you know, increase in status. Well, for her, she's got a calling. She's got a mission. She wants to work. And so she puts herself to work with three other young women who are also psychics, and they form the Ghost Precinct. And the Ghost Precinct helps the New York Police Department at the time, skeptical as it is in my series, to interpret what ghosts are saying and use that to help solve weird, disturbing, unsettling crime that is going on in different parts of the city. And we start to realize that there's a pattern in some of that, and it's going to continue as the series goes on. But at the heart of this story is some talented young people who are utilizing the paranormal resources around them to try and ease suffering in the city.
And a lot of times you see that's what paranormals, I see them as they exist in the world, our world. There's sort of a calming effect that becomes of what they're able to either equate from people who have passed over or information that maybe is lost, try to help people.
Exactly. And that's Eve's mission, as one of her things that she wants to do is not only help people and interpret what the ghosts want to say. You know, she really looks at what she does as a calling, both for the ghosts to listen to them, so that they feel that their spirit that's still wandering the earth is acknowledged, is appreciated, but then also to turn that around and ease suffering for someone in who is living as well. So that's and that's definitely something she puts into practice in the course of this first book. And I see that over the course of why people are drawn to psychics and mediums and things like that, whether or not you believe they're real or not. Eve is constantly battling that fine line because she does encounter charlatans in her world, and there were certainly lots of people who were taking advantage of people in the 19th century because of that fascination, that craze of when it was really first beginning. Spiritualism really was born in this country as sort of this phenomenon in the 19th century, and it speaks to, you know, a human urge. We're very curious about the beyond, and I don't presume to know or answer any of those questions. I'm interested in the divine mystery, as are my characters, and so we find that out together. But it is such a common yearning to have the sense of, well, what is past this mortal coil, and those questions drive me as a writer.
What is it that you are able to do as far as research for something like this? Obviously, as a writing a novel, you have your imagination as well, but what kind of things do you try to anchor it into the past, or things that seem almost too real to be true but were, but can add sort of a depth and color to your fiction?
That's a great question, and well put. As a New York City tour guide, I am steeped in wonderful, delicious facts. And, you know, my friends, whether they want to or not, we're passing by something, and inevitably I will drop, you know, a few tidbits about what we're walking by. So I can really immerse myself in the path of my characters. I like to walk the streets that my characters walk. I really like to be real physical about all of it. And so as a tour guide, I just kind of absorbed a lot of things. And so a lot of times my books will reflect the things that I find most interesting, little tidbits here and there about buildings that have, you know, that themselves have stories to tell and that are still with us today. One of the things I was really surprised by is just how many telephone wires were around in 1892. There's a resource that I go to. It's my honest to God go-to resource. It's called The King's Handbook of New York, and it was published, this edition that I have a reprint of, is the 1892 edition, and it has period photographs, which are really helpful when I'm trying to describe a period scene, and some buildings that weren't there, and some buildings that were, and so I get a chance to kind of see what things look like from that point, and the area around them, which is pretty fascinating too. But I was surprised at how many telephone wires, you know, thousands of lines and miles of wires that were around in 1892. So I make the telephone a part of my, characters struggle with the modern world. There's telephones that they use to communicate, and in fact, even a spirit actually calls on the phone, and she interprets a call from the beyond. So as my heroine Eve is grappling with these new technologies, so were everyone else, and I think that's really relatable to our modern world as we grapple with new technologies. So I talk about there being new electric lights in places, and I talk about the telephone being something that all of my characters are getting used to, especially my older characters who are, you know, kind of grumpy about it. And it's really fun to kind of play in that because I think we can all relate to that. There's just so much about the 19th century that's the birth of the modern world that is recognizable and exciting for us and relatable to us. So it's like, I don't really want people to think of history as this dusty thing. It's this constantly dynamic thing.
You mentioned about your touring of New York. I mean, there's history that's still alive there. You mentioned how you can see things. And, you know, cities have old buildings that were there, saw all of the wars that the country went through, the change and where things are. But yet they're sort of still there to remind us of the past.
Absolutely, absolutely. One of my favorite haunted buildings in the city is the Morris Jamel Mansion, which is off of 162nd and 163rd, over on the upper west side, the Washington Heights area. It is where George Washington spent the Battle of Washington Heights, and it's that building is still there, and it still has all of that energy, and it has, in and of itself, incredible history. And they give paranormal tours there, which is pretty wonderful, and they also just have a great educational program. But the fact that house is still standing in Jamel Terrace is just, it's an incredible thing. And so, you know, appreciating history, I hope that folks will, you know, will look around them wherever it is that they are. I mean, Cleveland's got really rich, incredible history too. And it's like everywhere you are, there's something to appreciate. And I hope I can get that across as well.
We're talking today with Leanna Renee Heber, the book that she has written, the newest, latest one, The Spectral City. So this will be a series. And we've got you've been introduced to Eve Whitby, I believe is her name.
Yes, correct. Exactly so.
What? How much of? And I usually ask authors, especially if there's a heroine and they're a female author, how much do you see yourself in there, or what kind of characteristics do you put in there, in that character that really comes from you?
That's a really great question. There's a bit of me in everything that I write. I mean, my heart and soul is really in my books. I mean, my worldview, my whole kind of thoughts about life, I'm processing all of that with you. There's a lot about me and Eve that are similar, and yet I think she's really, really brave. I don't know that I could have withstood the same kinds of pressures that she did with the level of kind of interference that she's dealing with coming in from the mortal world. I think it's relatable for anybody who has dealt with depression or anxiety or these other things that are kind of like eating at your mind and taking up space and making a lot of noise. I do relate to a lot of that. So I think that there's, for me, her powering through, her realizing, like, I've got this thing that is sometimes a blessing and a curse. How do I transform that into something that's helpful? And that, to me, speaks to mission. She's very driven. She's very motivated, as I am. And so I think that that's where her and I are the most alike. I don't think I would want to go into the grisly moments that she goes into, and I certainly wouldn't want to witness some of the case details that she does as she begins to help out with some of these. I don't really think I'd want to see the amount of dead bodies she's seen, or will continue to see as the series continues. So, she's got a bit of a harder stomach than I do.
Let's talk maybe a little bit. You mentioned how you've done sort of the ghost tours. You're dealing with this era. Do you have any personal experiences related to ghosts or other things like that?
I have. I mean, I am a skeptic first. I'm not one who rushes to believe. I'm not someone who needs constant proof or any of that kind of stuff. I look and see if I can figure it out via any kind of logical, scientific means. And if I can't, then okay, then that is something else. There's, you know, things I've physically seen with my eyes, things I've heard that others have seen and heard as well, and we can't figure that out, where that came from, how that, you know. There's all kinds of ways in which the spirit world likes to manifest it, in using any number of the five senses to try to activate your sixth. And I just think that there's a lot of really fascinating things. For me, as a tour guide, I'm interested most in telling you the history and then in the ghost stories as they've been related. There's a lot of interference and a lot of noise and a lot of stimuli in New York, so you kind of have to be in a quiet space for the paranormal to actually really manifest to you in the moment. However, I will tell you that And I'm so upset that I don't have proof of this, because I saw it in person, and so did everyone who was on my tour. But for whatever reason, the woman never did send me the photograph. But she took a photograph of me in front of the house where Edgar Allan Poe read The Raven aloud for the first time. And I am a huge Edgar Allan Poe fan. If you like Poe, you will like what I do, because I based everything, like, Poe is my North Star. If I ever get, like, at a loss for anything, I go back and I read some Poe, and I feel energized and thrilled and terrified all over again in a great way. So I was in front of this house and talking about Poe passionately, as I always do, and she took this picture, and when that little red light goes off before your camera goes, in that moment she captured the actual reflection of that light, that red light of the camera illuminated a face next to me in the pillar. And it was, I swear to you, the shadow of the visage of Edgar Allan Poe. And she screamed when she looked at the viewfinder. She just turned it around to see how the photo came out. And then she screamed, and then everybody, of course, came around, you know, my 20 or so tourists came around to look in, and we all freaked out, because there was a clear visage of the man I was talking about, like, in this reflection that was on this granite pillar. It was wild, and I said, you have to send that to me. She never did. But I know what I saw, and I know that I had witnesses, so...
That's a great story, and also the fact that, you know, you have such a passion for Edgar Allan Poe, and there it is as well. You've been known to sort of dress in sort of Victorian era thing. Do you ever do that when you're writing? Does that help sort of inspire you at that point, or is that sort of just something to remind people of the style of music or writing that you do?
I mean, I really am, like, I'm a bit of an antiquated soul. I mean, I sort of call myself a reincarnate Victorian, because I came into this world with this sort of antiquated sensibility, and not in terms of being backward, but just having, I really love rich language. And so the things that I gravitated to as a child was classical music, you know, big floofy skirts and old buildings. So the architecture, the literature, and the music of the time period speaks to me as very, very familiar. So I just kind of live in that. And when I'm writing, I'm in some kind of various flowy thing, but usually it's not, I'm not going to sit down necessarily and write in a corset because, you know, there's, it just kind of depends. It's a little hard to relax when you're in a corset. I'm in it very often because I do all kinds of period events. And so, but I am writing historical fantasy, so it doesn't exactly have to be entirely period. So I like to, you know, have a sense when people see me in public, they can take a look at my clothes. I always, one of my taglines is, if you like my clothes, you'll like my books. I dress like I write. So, you know, I think that it, for me, it's a part of immersing myself in that world that I want you as the reader to feel immersed into.
Yeah, I love that line. That's great. There must be a lot of buttons in all of this.
Oh, there's a lot of, so many buttons.
I mean, that's where...
So many buttons.
Yeah, well, thank goodness for the zipper, for the Industrial Revolution and the zipper.
We had, exactly. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, so many buttons. That's the thing. It's like you just... One of the things people don't think about is like just how much time it took to get dressed for everybody. I mean, everybody was in layers and everybody was in all kinds, you know, all kinds of trappings one way or another. So, but I actually love the details of that. For me, that's another part of the sort of sensory experience of being in a different time period.
Well, they can read all about that through your words in your latest book, again, The Spectral City. As I read somewhere, it says that solving crime is not only for the living, I think is what I read.
Exactly so.
As well. We appreciate your time, Leanna Renee Heber, our guest author this morning. If people want to find out more about your book or you, or even maybe take one of those New York City trips, tours, what's the way?
Absolutely. So visit my website. It's LeannaReneeHeber.com. That's LeannaReneeHieber.com. If you look up my last name, Heber, and The Spectral City, that's will bring up any number of retailers. The book is available wherever books are sold. It is a very affordable ebook. It's only $3.99 in digital, and you can get that at any digital retailer, whether it's Kindle, Nook, Kobo, any of the digital platforms. If you don't have a Kindle, that's fine. You can just download it to your computer, your phone, whatever device you have. It's also in trade paperback as well, and also Tantor Audio does the audiobook, and Tavia Gilbert is my narrator, and she's magnificent. She does a wonderful job. So ebook, trade paperback, or audiobook, it's available across platforms. So look up The Spectral City and join us for this adventure. It's book one in what will be officially a trilogy, and then if you all like it, we'll do some more.
Wow. Have you made those video book trailers I've seen? That was a whole new thing to me about way.
Yes, I have done a few book trailers for my other work. I have not yet done a book trailer for this series, mainly because I have a wonderful band that I'm working with, Valentine Wolf, that calls themselves sort of a Victorian chamber metal band. So if you know, there's chamber music. Well, they sort of do chamber metal. And so I've got this wonderful thing of like this antiquated sound with this sort of fantastical overlay, which is a great merging of the minds for my work. So Valentine Wolf is going to be doing the official Spectral City theme song that will be available by the second book. So we're going to be working on that together for the next year. So there'll definitely be video that comes out with all of that, which will be really fun.
Good. You have put together so many words I never thought would go together.
I try.
Amazing. That sort of shows you work as an author and a wordsmith. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you for a wonderful interview. I'm so grateful.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.